Hi, I'd like to visit with you today on why the Federal Reserve should be abolished. In the years leading up to the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the real reasons for doing so were not mentioned. The leading promoters were motivated by evil intent. Thus, the plans were laid out in total secrecy at Jekyll Island in 1910. The Federal Reserve Act was passed at the end of 1913 in a shady legislative session. The goal, in reality, was to legalize counterfeiting of U.S. currency, done in secret and permitted by an act of Congress. It was designed to be controlled by non-elected private banking and corporate officials. The goal was to accommodate and protect special financial interests. In essence, it was to be a form of corporate and banking welfare. In the debates leading up to the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, the actual beneficiaries were not identified. The political beneficiaries, those who would gain power in designing a welfare warfare system, were not revealed. There was no concern expressed for the potential victims of this nefarious central banking scheme. The middle class and all the innocent people who would suffer from this new monetary system were not made aware of the danger that a powerful central bank posed. The innocent victims-to-be never realized that the proposed new system was destined to destroy the wealth of the nation. The long-term plan was to destroy the concept of sound money, that is, precious metals as money, in order to remove the brakes on government spending and size. It was intended that central economic planning would be taken over by the elite at the expense of the free market. As so often is the case, the free market was blamed when the failure of government economic interventions failed. Unfortunately, this leads to more economic intervention rather than less. One must remember that the elite planner's goal is to secure power and wealth. This inevitably requires a monopoly control of the monetary system. A redeemable precious metal standard is the enemy of any self-ordained group of experts taking charge of the political system. A monetary monopoly is a requirement for all systems that believe in centralized power and are annoyed by concerns for the protection of civil liberties. All socialist and fascist systems understand this principle. It was obviously logical that the real reason for instituting a private central bank monopoly over the U.S. financial system had to be hidden, because if the people understood what it meant, they would challenge it. The schemers had to make sure that their motives appeared to be above reproach. Those who laid out the plans for instituting the Federal Reserve System also planned to incrementally implement it in order to enhance the deception. They also were prepared to defend the system they sought to impose on the American people at all costs. Total disregard for the people who would pay dearly had to be silenced, lest the whole scheme would fail. The excuses given for the vital need to establish the Federal Reserve were what the people and most members of Congress heard. This is what they responded to. The biggest excuse to establish a central bank, even though it was unconstitutional, was the previous bank panics and recessions. No doubt, average people suffered when the banks became insolvent and could not fulfill their customers' demand for gold or silver. Economic downturns came with bank panics and affected jobs and the standard of living for many. Middle-class depositors were just as annoyed as were the banks when insolvency was apparent. The real culprit was the dishonest principle of fractional reserve banking that was practiced by the banks in defiance to the rules of the gold standard and a violation of the Constitution, which stated that only silver and gold were to be used as money. State laws permitted this kind of inflation by allowing the loaning out of more money than the banks held. Common sense should tell anyone that if a bank's solvency is questioned, getting one's cash out of that bank as soon as possible made sense. The strategy for establishing a central bank was to guarantee protection for the banks whenever confidence in the system was lost. The pain then would be distributed to the general population, making it difficult to identify the victims. The goal was to get the people to go along with this scheme to protect the banks by allowing the central bank to bail them out from the consequence of making risky loans. The Federal Reserve would be charged with making the banks secure through gimmickry and guaranteeing the safety of the customers' deposits. What was this plan? First and foremost, the Federal Reserve would need an elastic currency and be allowed to create money as needed by the bankers serving as the lender of last resort. This means that with the failure of bad management and federally permitted fraction reserve banking, the banks would be exempt from the consequences they deserved. The bailout scheme was welcomed by the banks and their big business depositors, but it would continue the policy that caused periodic grief in the 19th century with panics, bank runs, and recessions. The new policy nationalized and monopolized this very bad policy of allowing banks to loan out what they did not have and pass the risk on to unaware victims. The promise to insure all depositors by the FDIC provided only superficial protection and allowed the financial bubbles to get bigger and last longer, delaying the day of reckoning, which is now arriving. The central bank programs were designed to legalize a fractional reserve system, provide fictitious insurance, and to regulate interest rates, supposedly to create growth. Instead, it served to facilitate huge debt and malinvestment. This resulted in destabilizing the entire financial system. The fractional reserve system that was devised became the mother of all moral hazards by repealing the constraints provided by the gold standard. This was done in order to subsidize the wealthy, powerful elite in charge at the expense of the middle class while allowing welfare and warfare to thrive. A philosopher's stone for the politicians. Congress's specific directions to the Fed were used to waylay any fears or apprehensions of the developing monster with grandiose promises that were to be carried out in secrecy and without oversight. No serious audits were to be permitted. The stated purpose of the central bank was to maximize employment, yet it did not give a clear definition of just who is employed and who is not. It was directed to achieve stable prices and manipulate interest rates to manage economic growth while permitting it to accumulate massive regulatory powers over the many years. These powers were delegated to the Fed in a pretense of making a deeply flawed policy workable while covering up all the errors and complications it would create. The Federal Reserve Act created a system built on deception and flawed economic thinking, yet designed to serve the interests of statism and the deep state elite. This would allow them to control the strings of finance and support the complex system of benefits and subsidies to the various special interests. The inevitable result was destined to be runaway government, a financial crisis, loss of personal liberty, and constant wars. That is where we are today. The program that could reverse this flawed policy is not complex. The Keynesian principles of centrally managed the economy must be challenged and eliminated. Economic growth cannot be achieved by purposely increasing debt to stimulate consumption with the expectation that it will produce a healthy, productive economy. The belief that government spending and Federal Reserve money creation are the source of wealth and economic growth has proven to be a failed policy. Money out of thin air is not equivalent to wealth. Instead, it destroys wealth creation, and the policies of the last 8 years proves beyond all doubt that it doesn't work. In contrast, the free market and sound money offers a different approach. Wealth under these conditions comes from work, production, savings and investments, which are required for productive jobs, greater wealth creation, and a rising standard of living for the middle class. This is in sharp contrast to the conventional wisdom of the interventionist model of government. Government spending, debt, federal credit creation that ultimately destroys an economy. Unwilling to use a little common sense doesn't help in solving the economic growth riddle. Recent evidence of the total failure of Keynesian economics and central bank economic planning is plentiful. The current economic stagnation is clear evidence of the failure of government economic intervention and the Federal Reserve's mischief. The anger and political vitriol that we're witnessing today are the predictable consequence that accompanies chronic economic stagnation from which we are suffering. The Great Recession, that started in 2008 and continues today, exemplifies the failure of current economic thinking. The bursting of the housing bubble in 2008 was not a surprise for all Austrian economists. The consequences since then have been severe and will continue without any significant economic growth unless major policy changes are made. The interventionists, since the Great Recession began in 2008, went full throttle, testing their failed theories in a futile effort to reignite the economy. The Fed increased its balance sheet by 500%, from $850 billion in 2008 to $4.5 trillion today. GDP growth, nevertheless, has remained anemic, barely getting over the 2% per year. Average recoveries in the past have averaged around 3.9%. The puny growth results from this massively excessive monetary inflation exemplifies a failed program. The $10 trillion of federal debt increase by excessive spending has only put the economy in a deeper hole and did nothing to energize the economy. Evidence that massively printing money and expanding debt doesn't help has not stopped the determination of the current economic planners at the Fed and into Congress to continue the same policies they have used for decades and expecting different results. Still, the Fed indicates with a straight face that if the economy gets worse, it can always consider quantitative easing once again as a solution. The Federal Reserve is a failed institution. Its theories have proven to be consistently wrong. The big one, the inevitable economic correction that many have anticipated, has started. Continuing current policy will only make it worse. There's no reason to expect a return to respectable economic growth anytime soon. We must remember that printing money and expanding debt does not create wealth. It destroys wealth. The Fed has not only proven itself to be unnecessary, but poses great danger to all of us as well. Monetary reform, liquidation of debt and malinvestment, and a newly defined narrow role for government are the changes needed, and there's no evidence that the current Congress, the administration, or the Federal Reserve will provide them. Unfortunately, even the majority of the American people would strenuously resist any sudden moves in that direction. Too many people believe that promises made by the politicians and the current economic policies in place will provide the prosperity they are anxiously waiting for. The people too often believe that all that is necessary is better management, not a significant change in the philosophy of our government, and they do not realize that the economic planning that we have been subject to for the last nearly 100 years needs to go. Current Washington politicians will not accept the philosophy of liberty. That would be too much of an attack on their privileged positions. No matter how bad it gets, the politicians in charge and the elites who run the show will never admit that oppressive government is the culprit and work to change it. The only way that's going to happen is after there is a huge bankruptcy requiring massive liquidation of debt and malinvestment. Instead, this is what we should expect to see. Increased anger, emotional discourse, ugly demagoguery, and constant false charges intertwined with total denial and little understanding of the problem, making a readily available solution practically impossible. The real issue is a struggle for power and controlling wealth. Sadly, this is never seriously deliberated by our leaders. They concentrate on achieving power from which they expect to control the wealth of the nation. There's little understanding or interest in providing a political system that provides maximum incentives for everyone in a free market economy. It's unlikely that we will soon see the rejection of central economic planning. The support for the welfare warfare state, the devotion to deficit financing, and confidence that the Federal Reserve will always rescue us give the leaders a false sense of security. These are the issues that should be talked about, but they are not the issues that we constantly hear about. Deception, distraction, and falsehoods can be expected to come from the leadership of both political parties. We cannot expect to get the plain truth about how our monetary system is run secretly by the Federal Reserve to serve the elite rich, nor will we get the straight story from the people who are actually in charge and who have the capacity to control the propaganda they desire in order to defend and distort the policies of the deep state. The principle of personal liberty and free markets associated with private property rights are necessary if we want to work our way out of this mess. The battle is between market forces and voluntarism versus political dictates of the special interests, which are shrewdly couched in terms of caring for the downtrodden and the middle class. The swamp is dangerous, and it's more dangerous than ever, and the drainage equipment has not yet arrived. We who believe this way are actually the majority, but the evildoers who totally disagree with us and want to control the power and wealth gravitate to government and our universities. This allows the few at the expense of the many to gain control over the political and economic system. It is not as simple as to say that what we need is more democracy for the majority to have its way. What must be understood is the principles of liberty must never be undermined, even by a majority vote. That would require strict limitations on the powers of our elected leaders and an electorate sophisticated enough to prevent the tyrants from taking over through the lies and deceptions by the politicians who promise safety and security at the expense of liberty. The would-be dictators should be forced to live in a society that prohibits the use of force by government to achieve special benefits for the elite. That's when they will be outnumbered and will be forced to take a job rather than just usurping political power and rule over others. The people need to give up on the idea that the problem is just due to mismanagement and the corruption of a few. Instead, what is needed is that the principles that underpin welfareism, warfareism, central economic planning, and central banking have to be refuted. The time is coming when the economic and political chaos will force the people into making a decision on whether or not they want to live in a free society, which offers the only real chance for the middle class to achieve prosperity and enjoy peace, or continue to witness the disintegration of our society and the wiping out of America's middle class. Fortunately, there is a growing number of people throughout the country who are very knowledgeable of what a free society is all about, and likewise are quite aware of the coming chaos that will require the American people to decide whether or not it's more liberty or more government that will best serve the human condition.